We will start the regular city council meeting now. Okay, we will start with a moment of silence followed by the pledge of allegiance. Mr. Crawford, call the roll, please.
Certainly, we have Mike Hill.
Here.
Sonia Hurt.
Here.
Eric Lewis.
Here.
Richard May.
Present.
And Mary Lou Stewart.
Here.
Eric Davidson and Ryan Lopez requested to be excused.
I have a motion to excuse city council members. Okay. Mr. Lewis and Mr. Hill, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passed 5-0. We will now go on to the blessing of the fleet proclamation. Let's do it every year at this time. You ready?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Whereas the Seafarers Memorial at Lane Harbor was established in 1984 to promote community awareness and memory of fishers and other sailors who departed Whatcom County safe harbors and were lost at sea, and whereas the community of Lane, Washington continues in its concern of the safety and welfare of its seagoing ships and their crews, and whereas the fisher's life is burdened with hazards and difficulties unknown to most of us, and whereas strength and courage are basic requirements for anyone who chooses to work on the high seas, battling the elements in order to harvest nature's bounty, and whereas the men and women who work on boats, living between God and sea, and never certain which will claim them first, are deserving of our respect and our gratitude, and whereas when fishers do lose their lives, their deaths impact the tightly knit fabric of this and all communities, and whereas the citizens who constitute a Blaine Community Chamber of Commerce Committee dedicated to preservation, enhancement, and promotion of the Seafarers Memorial have planned a service for the blessing of the feet at the Blaine Harbor. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the community of Blaine and I, Mary Lou Stewart, Mayor of the City of Blaine, Washington, extend our heartfelt thoughts and prayers to the families and friends of the men and women claimed by the sea, and we wish the entire commercial fishing fleet a safe and prosperous season, and pray that all fishing men and women will return safely home to their loved ones. And I do hereby proclaim May the 4th, 2025 as Blessing of the Fleet Day.
Yes. Do you have a copy of that?
I will get a copy of that.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, so you'll be there, right? Okay. I'd just like to give you a little bit of insight into the Fisherman's Memorial and how it all started. And council members here will probably be pretty interested in this. In 1984, Tom Burton, who was a local fisherman at that time, like myself, was the mayor. Blaine. And he instigated, one of the biggest instigators of having the memorial and doing the plaque. And so how it ended up is about 3 years later, he and I were fishing together and he kept harping at me, well, I should be on this committee. And so eventually, a year or so later, I got on the committee. Right after that, he got off. I've been on it ever since. something wrong with that picture a little bit, I think. Anyway, he still lives here in Blaine, great guy, and he had a lot to do with how this all started. And so our whole purpose is to kind of twofold. Number one, to make sure that we acknowledge all of those that have been lost at sea. And that number right now, since the turn of the century, is about 40. And then on top of that, we also, every year between blessings, from the time the last one started to now, we lose fishermen or fishers at home, we recognize them. And the way we do that is we'll read the names of all those people, the ones, the 40, when those names are read, they are all on the plaque. Their names are engraved into the plaque, which is housed down in the harbor, right behind the harbor master's shack there. And we do that by placing a flower in a wreath. And also, when those that we lost at home, we do the same thing for them. That wreath is then, at the end of the day, is then taken out on one of the local guys. One of the fishermen usually take it, probably with their family, and they take it out into Boundary Bay and set it free. We've been doing that since 1984, and we'll do that again this year. Our hope is always that the younger generation will know what we've done and how we did it. And that somebody in that younger generation, and I've kind of been on the prowl looking at, as I get a little bit older, looking at somebody to take this thing over, and I'll find one. I haven't found one yet, but I will. And hopefully this will continue for a long time. We appreciate the fact that you guys do this, that you endorse us by doing a resolution. The state of Washington does it also. So we have a number of different people that show up at this event. And I would invite anybody that wants to come, you're sure welcome to come and see what we do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have a public hearing. Persons speaking on the public hearing topic will be allowed 5 minutes. Additional non-repetitive testimony will be allowed after all testimonies have been heard. Written testimony can be sent to City Council by 3:30 p.m. will also be included in their record. Written testimony can be sent to City Council at cityofblaine.com. The public hearing is on Municipal Code 17.44, amending the City of Blaine zoning map and text for the planned commercial zoning district, and rename it as the Urban Mixed Use District. You want to start, Mr. Wenger, and just review what this is about?
Sure. I do have a brief presentation on this. But let's go for it.
You can do a speedy version.
The speedy version coming up. So just a little background. I'm not going to go through all these, but this has been docketed by City Council. We've completed the process. The proposal really is to clean up some of the red tape in our code in this particular district and to streamline development. There's some language in there that really talks about, or requires projects to go through either a conditional use or a planned unit development if the project's large enough. There's kind of some of the zoning highlights on there. I'm not going to go through all these. We introduced the Planning Commission's recommendation in this last meeting. So this text and map amendment applies to two specific areas. There's a northern and a southern planned commercial district. The northern area is kind of behind IGA shopping our grocery store south, right across the street from Lincoln Park on H Street between Ludwig and Odell. You can see it there. There's a, and then here's the southern zone off Bell Road, kind of the bigger building in the picture is the Pacific Building Center. So those are the two areas of the city. We presented this to the council at their last meeting, and there were some questions about this specific area and how it might impact the interchange in the future. So staff did revise our recommendation, which is in your packet. You could either omit this area or potentially split this zone in half. So the Planning Commission held a public hearing on this on March 13th. They unanimously recommended approval. So council has a number of options before it. You can approve this, you can deny it, you can remand it back to the Planning Commission. But now that you've had a public hearing, so you should deliberate. And if council believes that by amending the proposal, the public's interest is better served, you may do so. So you can actually change the proposal this evening. So that's just a quick overview. I'm not going to get into all the zoning specifics, but if there's any questions, I'd be happy to talk about them.
Thank you. Okay, anyone that wishes to speak to the public hearing, would you like to step forward to the podium? You have 5 minutes on this topic and this topic only.
Thanks for the overwhelming public support on this issue.
So if there is no one that wants to comment at this time, I will close the public hearing. Okay. We will then move on, because this will be discussed. We can have any discussion on this when we actually discuss what we're going to do with this.
Well, I would like to make a proposal regarding this matter.
You can when we bring this up.
Okay, correct.
Okay. So moving on, we have the consent agenda. Items listed below will be enacted by one motion. If separate discussion is desired on an item, that item may be removed from the consent agenda and placed on the regular agenda at the request of the council member. Approval of bills, $158,710.84. Approval of April 14th, 2025 City Council minutes. Approval of second amendment to the CES director contract. I have a motion.
Madam Mayor, I have a question.
Yep.
On number three, Mr. Harmon, what additional employees does Mr. Winker have that I thought we were down employees, not up?
Madam Mayor. So this, to my point earlier, is an attempt to make our CDS department more efficient. To right now, stormwater falls under Harvey Yarder's, or excuse me, Director Gandhi's purview. This would move that FTE upstairs and put stormwater under Alex's purview. It would also move the civil engineer upstairs and put, so that way we have all of our private development review in the CDS department. Right now, an applicant comes in, they give their application to CDS, they work with both the CDS department, Public Works department. They're sometimes not on the same page. It's confusing to the applicant. So this would make Alex's department the one-stop shop for all permits and applications for private development.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. So Mr. Lewis made a motion. Is there a seconder?
Seconder.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? They passed 5-0.
Thank you, Council.
Council action items. Provision of senior services and facility rental at Lane Community Center, Mr. Harmon.
Thank you, Mayor. So quick background, we issued an RFP back in December. The city received two. Those RFPs were for looking for a contractor to provide senior services at the community center. Remind you, Council, we provide half of the financial support for that contract. The county provides the other. The county gives us the requirements that they have in order to have those grant funds. In evaluating the two proposals, we found that the proposal from the district, Blaine Birch Bay Park and Rec District 2, to be the best proposal. We thought it would best serve the seniors moving forward. We started to do a little research, and this model exists in others. Other communities, I think specifically Bellingham, they have a park and rec, park department internally. There was a call with Anacortes. Anacortes has a park and rec department where they manage the senior services. So this is certainly done throughout Washington. And ultimately, after discussions back and forth with both the district and the senior center, it was determined that either one or the other provide those services. And so we're bringing forward that contract for you tonight in accordance with our recommendation that the district be the provider of those services. And that contract is in your packet. Essentially, the district would provide all of the staffing and operations for the senior center, as well as the programming. They're required by this contract to solicit feedback from the senior center, to recognize them. I don't want to call them a bargaining unit, but almost sort of like a bargaining unit, where they're the official representatives of the seniors, and to solicit their input as they develop programs and activities at the senior center.
Can I get a clarification on that detail there? So getting feedback from the senior center, does it specify in that paperwork that feedback is from a group of members of the senior center who have selected among themselves the people to be part of that feedback body?
So that would be from their board. The RFP would look at their board as the official representatives of that organization.
Okay, so the senior center members elect a board, and that board is what's referred to as who feedback should be gotten from.
That's correct.
Thank you.
The district would also be responsible providing the safety policies and making sure that the facility is operating safe and continuing some of the volunteer activities such as Meals on Wheels. That's a very important program to our community. We spoke with the district. They plan to make sure that is carried forward, and will support those volunteer activities, specifically including Meals on Wheels. And then additional item for the community is that the district has a vision to program that space after hours, which has been done a little bit in the past. Sort of hit and miss, but they really want to fill that space up. So looking at programs beyond just those 50 and older after hours, very clear that space would be reserved for seniors, those 50 and above, during the hours that are specified in the contract. And then, yes, ma'am.
In reading that, there's a conflict. I left my page at home, unfortunately, but at the beginning, it states that Parks and Rec is to be there from 8 to 5. But then down lower, it says 8 to 4 is senior activities. So was that an error, or is there something there? Is it supposed to be an hour when they go beyond senior services?
That way.
Or is that a correction?
So the version I'm looking at shows 5 p.m. And it is the intent in our conversation with the district that those hours will go until 5 p.m. My understanding is that the previous hours went to 4 p.m. But the understanding is 5 p.m.
Okay, and it says that it's available to the public after 4 p.m.
Okay, we'll check that. We'll check that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really, what we're doing tonight is not written in stone. There's termination provision in the contract if it doesn't work for either the district or the city. Either of us can terminate the contract with 120 days notice. If we've got issues, it calls for mediation and arbitration, things that we can work through. So with that, staff recommend that we move forward and award this contract to the district to provide senior services at the community center.
Okay. Madam Mayor, I'm sure most of the council have read all of the input that we've had through our emails from the community. We've had quite a few comments publicly at our hearings from people who support the senior center court running the place. The majority that we've received online have been people who are recommending Birch Bay Parks and Rec. And they are very interested in seeing that facility made more available for all kinds of events within the community. So there's a very strong push from the community at large to have Parks and Rec take it over. And why I had two concerns. One was that in the past, it seemed to me, at least over the last 5 years, the board of the senior center never had enough funds to adequately remunerate a manager to the point that they would stay. We've had a constant turnover. turnover because we couldn't pay them enough and couldn't give them benefits. So they left when they found another position that paid more. And when Parks and Rec, I'm hoping that we will continue to have some continuity and have a person managing the place that stays. The other concern I had was there was a lot of concern amongst the members about the exercise equipment. And everything I had heard was that they absolutely did not want anyone from the community to have access to it. But it's my understanding now that they have told Mr. Harmon that they want to give it all to the community. So I just need some clarification as to who is actually going to have access to it now.
Mr. Harmon.
So Councilmember Hurd is correct that we have had conversations about the senior center giving both the exercise equipment and the table and chairs and some of the other things they own in that building to the city. That has not been official from the board. It is with a couple board members, and so the whole board would need to act to do that. But those details we would work out on the transition plan. I don't think anybody's in a hurry to make this happen tomorrow, and so those details about who owns the equipment and how is it used will need to be fleshed out. But it's my understanding at this point that there's at least support from their board to give that to the city.
I have some clarification for what you mean there. Do you mean it remains in place and continues in use, or do you mean it goes somewhere else?
It
goes
equipment?
Away?
Yes. No,
it stays in the city. Oh, you just talked about who owns it.
Right.
It's still sits there being used.
Right, because there was conversation among the board members that they paid for it, it's theirs, and they don't want anybody touching it.
Oh.
And they didn't want any additional use that would wear it out before it would otherwise. So I was quite surprised, honestly, when I heard that they gave it to us, or offered to.
Madam Mayor, are there comments from council appropriate at this time?
You can comment, or you can comment after a motion has been made, and you still have time to comment.
We seem to be having some discussions, so I'll weigh in here. I'm a big supporter of the Parks and Rec District in general and what they've been doing up until this point, the rest of their usual ongoing activities. And I understood that they're that a big, I spoke to the director, and a big interest was the Blaine Senior Center. Historically, over the last decade or so, there's many times when it's just closed, and the doors are locked, the lights are all off, and of course, Parks and Rec District is seeing, well, there's great opportunity and potential to be able to run all sorts of additional programs during the time that the Senior Center was dormant anyway. So I'm very much in favor of that. I think that would be a great bonus for the Parks and Rec District to have additional places to be able to have all sorts of additional activities in the evenings and other times that the Senior Center would have just had nobody in it, the lights off. So that's definitely a good thing. I was very concerned, and I'm very glad to hear that the language of the agreement would make them have to be responsive to whatever board of the peer members of the Senior Center in whatever form that would be able to give feedback on that. I'm also very glad that there's the opportunity for us to be able to change or rescind the deal down the road if there's something that just completely doesn't go the way we're hoping to, so that we'd be able to come back and change, come back with some new either a change or a complete start from scratch or whatever we need to do. I'm glad the paperwork includes that option. It might be, yeah. I'm just putting into the record what my thoughts were on this so that we're not just looking like we just vote up and down on stuff without any thought. Those are my thoughts regarding this. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Davis.
My opinion is that the Senior Center Board ought to be given another 6 months in order to manage the facilities on their own.
Councilmember Lewis, would you think it would be a good idea? Apparently, the parties involved have turned this down, where if the Senior Center Board were just running the normal daytime activities but opened it up for the Parks and Rec District to come in and use up all those dormant hours, that kind of a hybrid you would have thought would have been a good idea?
Possibly. My view is that that facility ought to be utterly dedicated to the seniors, and we'll find another facility for non-seniors.
Yeah, I don't know if there is such a thing available. So I'm just trying to be frugal and getting the most use out of what we've already got. I could have seen that. Do I understand from city manager that the parties involved didn't want to have that you run the daytime, you run the evening kind of a split?
That's correct. We talked about a number of different hybrid approaches, and at the end of the day, it was determined that it would be one or the other by the parties involved, not by the city.
Understood.
Mr. Lewis, as the liaison to the Senior Center, I've been participating in the board meetings since last December, and it's become very clear to me that it's in the best interest of everyone to have Parks and Rec run it. There's been an ongoing inability for them to have a consensus. They always seem to be, I'll put it lightly, putting things off because they can't come to that consensus. And it's just, I think people in general these days are more hostile and less likely to agree with one another and more cooperative. And I see that in the board. And I saw it in the board that was replaced, and I'm seeing it currently in the board. I hear for them that they don't want to take on all the responsibilities. There's a lot. And they just don't want to do it. When offered the role as if they were like the friends of the senior center or advisory group, they would become the main fundraising arm. They didn't want to do that. They don't want to put the effort into it. And it's too important. I believe that facility has to be a benefit for the entire community of Blaine. And I think we can only do that by doing Parks and Rec. And I will be certain that I will be there making sure that they work cooperatively. And if I ever see Parks and Rec saying, no, you can't do things because we just don't think it's good, I'll be right there in their face. I'll be representing the seniors, make sure that they're heard and that they get what they want.
And we do have a backout period, so if in the, you know, the morning program people come in and open it up and there's solo cups and beer cans and cheesies all over the floor, we'll know that the evening activities are not being handled correctly.
Understood.
And after listening to the Zoom meeting with the Anacortes Senior Center, they're just so incredibly beyond what we currently have. It was amazing. The board members who were there along my side agreed that, my, they have all these incredible programs that we haven't even thought about yet. So a couple of the board members said, wow, this is a great opportunity. We may be able to have these new things that we didn't even think were possible. So I agree with them. I think it's a wonderful opportunity, and we should definitely give it a try.
Well, I'm always impressed with any individual or any group that says, give me a chance. I want to try. I want to keep working at this. So I think that's really where my gut is coming from on this.
It sounds like Parks and Rec, they want the whole thing.
Would you mind one, please, Mike?
So, yeah, I think I'd make a motion for Parks and Rec. Right.
I'll second.
Okay, all those in favor, say aye.
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 If we do this as a... Mr. Crawford, could we have this recorded then, please?
Certainly, are you seeing as a roll call vote?
Yeah.
Then I'll start with Councilmember May over here.
I'll say aye.
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 Nay. Okay, so that's passed 4-1. Opposed. Okay, moving on, we have Ordinance 25-3028. Approving the planned commercial zoning text and map amendment to urban mixed use, Mr. Wenger.
Yes, well, we did do a brief presentation on this a minute ago, and maybe we can bring that slide back up, bring up the southern area. But I really have nothing further to add. We received zero public comment this evening, so I would just turn it back over to council if there's any questions.
Well, great. Well, can I make my suggestion?
Yes.
Okay. Madam Mayor, I've given you two pieces of graphics here. The larger piece of paper shows where the Bell Road overpass. Two different drawings that are available on the City of Blaine website showing a possible, perhaps likely, location of where the Bell Road overpass would go. We've already received over $6 million from federal money, and so I hope that we are in favor, as a city, our official to-do list is in favor of the Bell Road overpass continuing, and that is our position until anything otherwise. And so I spoke at great length today with Planning Director Alex Winger, and basically it's the northern part of the planned commercial that has an actual project ready to go. The southern part, there's no imminent project coming up here. But what I look at is if you look at the way Bell Road dissects that into a western half and an eastern half, I'm proposing that the western half be included in the new UMU zone that would also include that that bit of the north end of town that has a development project ready to go. But I'm suggesting that the eastern part of this of the lower part be excluded from the new UMU designation and could just remain as planned commercial. In fact, I one of the documents I got this these drawings from, there was actually a request to make it planned commercial so that it was in preparation for the Bell Road overpass. So that's my proposal. If you'll entertain, would you entertain a motion to that? Okay. So I move.
Before, okay, you can move.
Please. What's the staff recommendation?
Yes. So staff
identified two options. One of them, this is actually option two that staff identified as a recommendation. The other option would be just to approve the northern half entirely and leave the southern half unchanged, because we have not identified a footprint for the overpass, but we do some of the very early preliminary drawings have shown it entirely on the eastern half. So we concur with Councilmember May's
recommendation. Councilmember May, that would be a good way to go.
Yes, that was one of the two options that staff had recommended.
Is that your number one, or is there? Okay.
So I have a question for you then, Councilmember Hill. There. So no matter what, I'm going to make a motion where the northern half gets approved as a UMU, so that project is all ready to go. Goes. Do you have a preference whether the western half of this also goes UMU, so they get all these new benefits? Or if we just leave the entire southern bit as in its original zoning, because that's a choice. We could sweeten up the western half of that while we're sweetening up that bit by Lincoln Park if they want to build on it. So do you want to just ignore the whole half here, the southern bit, and just leave it on its old zoning? Or do you want to take half of it and join it up with the northern zoning? Which would you prefer, Councilmember Hill?
I'd have to study.
Well, then we can leave it for now. We can come back another time if we want to sweeten up the western half.
It really don't matter. You guys make that decision. I'm not that deep into that, but I just thought that that thing's been sitting there forever, and they keep saying it's going to be built. We were going to have to build one before, and then it went to Ferndale. Now they give us $9 million, and we do six. But is that the state or federal?
Well, that's federal. We received $6 million federal dollars already to start getting the Bell Road overpass prepared. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So. Mr. Winger, wasn't there an apartment building complex that was proposed at one point recently to go along the waterfront there behind the City Building Center?
Madam Mayor.
Okay.
Yes, that is correct. At one point there was a 42-unit apartment complex.
And why did that fail to go through?
It was approved by the city, and then I don't really know the reason why that the owner didn't build it.
Was that long? Was it like 2008? There was something behind that.
It was quite long. I don't have the exact timeline, but it was something like 10
yeah,
years ago.
It was pretty good, and all of a sudden, something in the world changed.
Yeah. My concern, looking at this, is we have this crazy quilt of all these different little zoning areas. Do we have plans to expand this new UN zoning to adjacent areas, or are we going to just have these two little spots to have this unique zoning?
Madam Mayor, okay. That's something that we'll be working with our Planning Commission to bring forward a recommendation. I can't really speak to that at this moment, but that new UMU zone could be applied elsewhere in the city. There was one option is, I mean, both options are pretty good. I would say the absolute safest option would be to leave this entire district unchanged.
Leave the southern part, don't even change it, just change the north?
That would be the most conservative, safest route, in my opinion. You know, to if we are trying to, we are trying really hard to accommodate housing. So, you know, opening up the west side of this district to, you know, streamline housing and open up some development options for them, I think would help. But until we know that footprint, it's a slightly more risky if someone were to come in and try to get a development proposal vested or even build something.
Councilmember Hurt, I have a question for you. Would you, because I'm about to make a motion here, would you rather just amend the northern part and not touch this? Okay. I move that we go with the option to take the northern piece adjacent to Lincoln Park that is currently planned commercial and converted into the UMU zoning with the incentives to build on it. And to make no changes to the southern part of the planned commercial zone.
That's right. Okay.
Second.
Okay. Is there any further discussion on that? So the motion is to make the northern part in mixed use and the southern part staying as it is. Any further discussion before we vote on it? Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, looks like it passes. Any opposed? Okay, passes 5-0. Okay, thank you. Okay, moving on. Resolution 1971-25, adopting non-binding multi-jurisdictional population housing and employment allocations. Mr. Wingman.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. This is a proposal that will look a lot like the resolution that Council passed about 6 months ago. These are preliminary numbers. So again, these aren't final numbers. The growth allocations from Whatcom County are being coordinated with all the small cities. So every city is being asked to pass what we're calling the a non-binding multi-jurisdictional resolution. The city of Blaine's includes population growth of 3,500 people and 1,092 jobs. And I'll just leave it at that.
Hey,
Mr. Weinberg,
I had an observation. Looking at Exhibit B, on the housing growth by income, I thought it was very odd that we have kind of a dumbbell shape to our population. We're very heavy on the low income end and extremely high on the upper end. When I saw that over 120% was 359, and everything else in between was in the low 100s. Can you explain how we ended up with a population like that? Where's our middle income people? Is it all we have are our really old houses and the people who have been here for generations, and we don't have that middle income area of new?
Are these statistics greatly skewed by the fact that we've got these semi-amu gated communities in our statistics here?
Well, so these numbers are generated off the state's housing for all planning tools. So this is new housing that would be built in the city. You know, the 120% income band is really just detached single family homes. So there's some other information that goes along with this.
These are all new homes.
So we need a plan to accommodate homes in these income bands. So this is a first for all communities in Washington State have to plan for income bands. And so there's been a big coordinated effort, you know, through the cities in Whatcom County to plan for receiving our fair share of that allocation. And when you or go ahead.
If I'm correct, are the 80 to 100% is like medium income? Is that correct? The smallest number of houses we're providing is for that income level?
To the 80 to 100%, yes.
Yeah. It's only 95 opposed to 359. So why are we building so many new homes for the ultra, I don't want to say ultra rich, for the more well-heeled population?
It is a smaller percentage, you know.
They're not really homes for working people.
Well, it's a beautiful area.
Yeah.
Waterfront's expensive.
I mean, I would say these numbers are all kind of dictated by Whatcom County, so we don't really get to, like, move them around or change
them. Also, you're not building any homes. Some people who are business people are building homes, and they're building the ones that are expensive because they're in the business of making money.
Yeah, again, if I could, we need to plan for having enough land available that these homes may be built.
As a reminder that median income, these are round numbers for a family of four in Whatcom County, is around $100,000. So when we look at this graphic, it's saying we need to look at housing for a family of four making $120,000. That doesn't buy a lot of house, right? A family of four making $120,000 isn't a lot of house. So it may seem like those are big numbers, but when you look at the median income, it, you know, and you look at the entry level housing in Blaine, that's probably accurate.
And the state's, they're just trying, the state is really pushing to build up and build density, right? Just like, aren't we like the 50th worst state in the nation for housing?
Mayor, the state is pushing us to say, City Blaine, you need to plan for different housing types to meet different income segments. And these are approximately the number of housing types you need in these income segments that you should plan for. That's essentially what this graphic is.
So what's a guy do to the piece of control guys? I've been listening to them. You know, their starting wage, they come from Virginia, local here. They start at 40,000, and then they do. They all start at 40,000. Within 5 years, they're 100,000. But, you know, they go to Linden, they go here, they go there. Somebody just hasn't built this facility yet because you got all the, I mean, you got customs guys that want it. There's a lot of rental property out there. The problem is it's too expensive. So we've got to somehow figure out, the whole world's got to figure it out.
Okay, so basically, what I'm thinking is the resolution 197125 includes the same growth figures agreed to by the Blaine City Council in 1956-24, which was approved 6 months ago on November 28th, 2024. And we're just reaffirming that.
We're just adopting some non-binding figures.
Yeah.
Again.
Okay.
So could I have a motion to accept this resolution, please? Seconder? No seconders?
I'll second.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the resolution passed 5-0. Okay, moving on then, something easier or not. Resolution 1972-25, initiating the de-annexation of a portion of East Plain by removing approximately 552 acres from the boundaries of the city of Lane. Mr. Harmon.
Sure, and I'd look to Alex to jump in as he sees fit. Really, there's a fair amount of groundwork that has to be laid prior to a ballot action item going on this November. And so what staff are looking to the council to do is give us direction before we start to incur those legal fees and costs and staff time to move forward to tee this up for a voter action in November. We want to make sure that that is what the council wants. You've seen the presentations from Alex, and you've got, you know, the good and the bad of it. So that's what we're asking tonight, is give us direction on whether we proceed with severing East Plain or not.
I move that we accept resolution 1972-25.
Second.
Thank you.
I want a clarification. What goes to the voters would just be the de-annexation, not the whole swapping package that we've been discussing. Is that correct?
That's correct. Also know that that is one component. So voters could say yes, and this may not get through Whatcom County. That's one step of the journey to get East Plain severed.
But it's an essential step.
It's an essential step.
But with that in our hands, then we come to Whatcom County with that sense of urgency, is like, look, we did this. Let's, you know.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? This is passed 5-0. Okay, moving on, ordinance 25-3029, amending the Blaine Municipal Code, Chapter 13.18, updating the late penalty account balance threshold and minimum balance subject to suspension amount, is filed, please.
Okay, well, I think the title of the ordinance says it all. we'd just like to make two changes, and that is to move the open account balance that we assess late fees to $50 instead of $25 on utility accounts, and then the shutoff amount, we currently shut off at $50 or more owing.
I have a question about that. Considering how large our bills are, $50 seems awfully small to be threatening someone with disconnecting their services. Why is it so low?
So typically we have 40 to 60 disconnects per month, and those people who are disconnected are oftentimes return people. They know that this is how it goes, and they come in and pay the day of the disconnect due to whatever reasons. I think that it gets people to come in and pay their utility bills. Revenues are challenging for the city. And if we increase that threshold for disconnects, then we will also be reducing our revenues. We always are willing to work with people. If there is a medical reason that someone cannot be disconnected, then they are not disconnected, even if they have a balance owing. And so those people's accounts are flagged and marked unable to disconnect.
I'd like to understand what you said there. You said 40 to 60 disconnects, but it sounds to me like what you're meaning there is 40 to 60 times that people are notified that they are on the threshold of being disconnected, or do you mean 40 to 60 where the power is actually cut off?
40 to 60 accounts, so homes have their water first shut off, and then the electric follows thereafter. So the first day the water is disconnected, and then we send the crews out to disconnect electricity. And typically, most people come in and pay their balance before the electric gets disconnected. We never disconnect utilities on a Friday because then we're closed for the weekend, and any time that they would have it to get the utilities turned back on would have to be at overtime rates. So we disconnect on a Thursday. We don't disconnect on a Thursday before a three-day weekend when that's a Friday or a Monday. It's not pleasant to have your utilities disconnected. I understand that. It's not the favorite part of anyone's job, but it is how we keep our balances.
And the other question was about the threshold of $50 that Councilmember Hurd brought up there. Are there customers of ours where their entire bill is $50, their monthly bill is $50?
No, our base rates are just under $200 a month.
So, one missed payment and you're cut off.
Yes, you get your bill notification, you get your late notice notification, and then we also send out courtesy phone calls. It's a robocall. We just implemented that with Tyler. It's part of their system. And we accidentally sent out multiple calls, so some people got five calls as we were learning how to use the new system. But everyone has been thoroughly notified.
Okay. We have a motion to approve ordinance 25-3029, amending the Blaine Municipal Code. Mr. Lewis?
Mr. Hill?
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
One.
One. So passed 4-1, voting no. I just make one comment that the community assistance program is very, very helpful in people who are having trouble paying their utility bills. They do step in and help them pay their bills, just so that we know that's out there to help people.
Madam Mayor,
yes?
I'd like to add one additional. I've given Jennifer a lot of autonomy in that area. If a customer calls in and in good faith is working toward making payments, we err on the side of not turning somebody off. We'll work with that customer as long as they're paying something. We want to provide them with utilities, and we're not eager to say, no, bill in full or you get your power turned off. We do our best to work with the customer.
I only bring that up because a friend of mine just spent 5 weeks in the hospital, and he would not have received any of your warnings. And if that didn't, he would come home to having no power. So that's very concerning to me.
I want to jump in there. He would have received, it would take 3 months to get on the shutoff list, correct?
No, every month.
Every month, okay.
Every month.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is just you miss it one time and that's it. You're cut off. And there are lots of scenarios where people might be traveling and not get those notifications and come home and discover that their pipe froze or all their houseplants died or their cat froze to death. Who knows?
Do we know what it's like in other communities?
It's soup to nuts. I've worked in different states and for different utilities, and it's all across the map. It really can be whatever we want it to be. If council directs us to look into it and bring back other options, we certainly will. But it really can be whatever council wants it to be.
You know, apples and oranges where you come from, sir?
Yeah, it's soup to nuts. Yeah.
Okay, so moving on then to number 6, purchase of a vehicle for the stormwater department. Mr. Gandy, please.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So Public Works advertised for a bid to purchase a Chevy Field 58 Blue Cab on March 27th, closed on April 10th. We received 0 bid, so we went out for price quote. So Candle Chevrolet Municipal was the cheapest. So the quote was for $78,222.01. At this point, this truck is funded by the Stormwater Fund 425. In the CIP, and it's only funded for $75,000. We request council to accept the bid from Kenneth Chevrolet Municipal and authorize city manager to execute the purchase for $78,222.01. Thank you.
Does that include sales tax, registration, and all the additional fees? It's the whole package.
The whole package.
That's sad. Pricey vehicle. What's the
vehicle? It has a box actually, so this box has a back.
Okay, what's that vehicle used for?
It's on the stormwater department.
I looked it up online, and that's the going range.
Oh, I understand. No, I was just saying, is that for them to get back and forth, or just for a person to just get back and forth, or is it they bring in a whole bunch of tools?
No, a whole bunch of tools and everything.
Okay.
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 Could I have a motion we approve the purchase of a vehicle for stormwater department?
Second.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that's passed 5-0.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to commission, committee, and board reports. We have, first of all, Planning Commission.
Yes, Council, Planning Commission had a meeting on April 17th where we did a little one-hour growth workshop talking about, you know, where are all the houses going to go, a little bit like tonight, but a little deeper dive. And then they held a public hearing actually on zoning text amendments to the residential office district. We closed the public hearing. They're going to continue to talk about that at their next meeting in May and hopefully bring a recommendation to the city council fairly soon on the residential office district. So that concludes my update.
Thank you. Okay, then moving on to department reports, city manager.
Thank you, Mayor. A few items tonight. The mayor and I and Councilmember May attended the IMTC, which is a regional trade meeting involving partners from Canada and the city of Blaine. And suffice to say that the news is not good for Blaine. Right now, what we're seeing is in February, BC plates southbound, down about 20%. March, down about 30%. April, when we had the meeting as of a week or two ago, it was down 52%. Again, that's BC traffic southbound. What they're seeing is north freight bound hasn't changed a lot, but freight southbound, they said 70% of the Canadian carriers are seeing a dramatic reduction in freight southbound. And then also what they're seeing are carriers changing their pattern. So instead of vehicles coming up through I-5 and buying fuel and stopping in Blaine, they're now putting them on barges and things and going around the U.S. into Vancouver. And so trade patterns are changing. On a little bit better news is that it sounds like the port is not going to be under construction during FIFA. So they may start the project, but they will stop it during FIFA, or best case, try to start it after FIFA. So that's good news. Some updates, if you're headed southbound, a lot of construction on I-5 this summer around Lake Samish, some repaving in the Bellingham area. And then, you know, that's really it, Mayor, unless I left anything off. Our small cities update was similar. We had a really good presentation from Western Washington Economist, who presented some fascinating data on Blaine. And the mayor and I are going to invite him and the Whatcom Housing Alliance to come speak to council and give that same presentation, because it was fascinating. He was looking at Whatcom County and its affordability compared to other college communities across the nation, specifically wages to the price of housing. And what his initial research found is that we were one of the least affordable counties in the U.S. Now, again, this is all preliminary. He hasn't published it yet. But it was really fascinating data. When you compare wages in Whatcom County to the cost of living, we were not affordable. And that's looking at Asheville, Carolina, and some other college towns of similar size to Whatcom County. Some other items on my list. I'm going to get the bad news out of the way. Some of you may have seen the correspondence that Jeffrey Baker, or others may know as Otto Pointer, has had with the Department of Ecology on our downtown project. The Department of Ecology has taken a position that they're going to treat the entire site as contaminated. They don't have to take that position, but out of an abundance of caution, and due to Jeffrey Baker's correspondence, they have decided that that's the position they're going to take. So the city's left with a few options. We can either fight ecology, which would take months and cost money, and possibly lose our grant funds, or we move forward with a change order to either tarp the entire area, meaning that no runoff leaves the site, or to bring in Baker tanks and collect the rainwater, test it with frequency, and then determine how we discharge the rainwater.
What kind of tanks did you say there?
They're called Baker tanks.
So think of those tanks?
Think of those large tanks you see on construction projects.
Yeah, okay.
Initial numbers from our contractor right now are around 50,000, and that's, you know, depending on how much it rains. And so,
is that for any alternative or one specific alternative?
That, Madam Mayor, that's for one specific alternative to bring in Baker tanks. That's the safest. If we tarp the whole site, which also costs money, and we have a discharge, it's a $10,000 per day fine. And so you weigh the penalties versus the, you know, bringing in Baker tanks, and it's the safest.
How does the runoff get to these tanks?
It's collected on site and then pumped into the tanks.
So like we're going to have collection ponds or something somewhere, or?
On the construction site, they'll set it up so the stormwater is funneled into these collection systems for the paper tanks. So that's the bad news. You'll see an official change order for the project probably at our next council meeting on that.
And then we can get going.
The Department of Ecology has told us in writing they plan to issue the permit before May 15. We're waiting for the final permit from Ecology to get going. The contractor's ready to go. I would anticipate early June to see some progress downtown. That's most likely. Last item, session is over, and the budget has been decided, at least recommended to the governor. Bell Road did survive. There was, in one version of the House budget, Bell Road was kicked out in a biennium, but Bell Road did survive. Any new funding for Bell Road did not get awarded, but the existing $2.1 or $2.2 million did survive. And we can expect that in the 26 biennium. Of note, we're going to have our lobbyist, Emily Shea, come and provide a presentation to council. We're juggling council agendas and things like that, but she'll come give an update on session, how certain bills may impact us, et cetera, probably mid-June, maybe July. So that will happen. I've talked enough. I'll be done there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Public Works Department, Mr. Candy, please.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. For my update, it's Bob Hiff. So the contractor is back on site for finishing up the west side of Baldwin. The contractor has started working on the utilities, so the initial utilities of a strong water replacement. So they're working on it right now, and we'll see the project moving forward pretty soon.
Mr. Wagner.
Yes, this week we do have a sign variance public hearing with our hearing examiner for Bell's, Ben's Shell Station, gas station sign, which is on Boblett Street. It's right across from Ben's car stop on the south side of Boblett. So they're just trying to reduce the setback a little bit, and the city requires some extra right-of-way. So that's what that's about. If you hear about a sign variance public hearing this Thursday. In other news, we are advertising for Planner One, and that's currently open. We're using an applicant, so hopefully we get to fill that position here in the next little bit.
Mayor, if I could add one more. We heard back officially from trying to blank on the union. Thank you. And they asked for a $30,000 raise to give part-time code enforcement position to our building official. And so we've abandoned that and said, no, we're going to stay the course with code enforcement falling under the duties of the Planner One. $30,000 is just, it's way too much. And so we'll stay the course.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Finance Department, Ms. Bible.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So, as I stated earlier, sales tax is down about 10% from this time last year. It's $433,000 down. So we'll see. Sales tax is always 2 months in arrears, so we'll see soon what March holds and report that next month. There's also included is a Q1 Treasury report, and we're doing better there. While revenues are down across the board, except for in stormwater, which is at 28%, we should be percent used at 25% because we're 3/12 of the way through the year in this report. But our expenditures correspondingly are also down, so we are trying to save money where we can. I don't know if anyone has any specific questions regarding the Treasury report.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, there are some calendars to look at. We will have the City Council meeting on the 12th of May, but then notice on the 26th of May is Memorial Day, so the Council meeting will be on a Tuesday. Council on Finished Business. Council New Business and Dialogue. I'm just going to mention briefly that last Thursday, we had Senator Patty Murray from Washington, our state senator, one of our two state senators, come to meet with us in Blaine here for an hour. And also present was Mayor Brenda Locke from Surrey. Mayor Lund from Bellingham was also invited and was supposed to come, but she couldn't come at the last minute. There was a representative from Point Roberts, the owner of the significant store in Point Roberts, and also Lori Troutman, who is with the Western Washington University Border Policy Initiative. And Senator Murray was listening very carefully to what was going on in this area, and she was very interested, especially for Point Roberts. She's been dealing with them through COVID and through the period from COVID on, trying to help them because they are in desperate trouble. And she listened to our presentations, which we told her the statistics that you just heard. She also was willing to look into two other things. Can I mention the Klein property? So we mentioned the Klein property, which we're talking about as commercial development for Blaine. We are running into problems with the Army Corps of Engineers throwing blockades to this going forward. She said she would look into that, and also she would also keep Bell Road in her watch list as well. So it was a very useful hour talk with her, and we're very grateful that she made the time of her busy time to come and be here. So just saying all of that. Okay. If there's no
further... I wanted to dovetail on something the city manager said from the International Mobility and Trade Corridor meeting regarding the less BC plates going south, but then the amount of trucking that's going on. We may see a reduction in the trucking going north because reports from the Port of Seattle is that they've got zero cargo ships right now, zero cargo. Everything's completely dormant there. There's just nothing coming in, and there's a lot of people are predicting we're going to see commodity shortages that are going to exceed the commodity shortages we saw during the COVID pandemic. So I just wanted to make that comment.
I also have a comment reading Seattle Times this weekend. Everybody has told me in our VTAC meetings and other places that soccer fans are rabid fans and nothing's going to keep them away, but that opinion is beginning to change. People are becoming very afraid of coming to the United States for fear of being arrested. There have been stories of people who were incarcerated for 6 days, 6 weeks, and that is spreading, that information spreading worldwide. And some people are becoming very hesitant about coming. So we're probably not going to see the amount of people we expected.
Okay, and on that cheerful note, I will adjourn the meeting at 7:11.